Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hello, my name is Stephen Lewis, and you are listening to The Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. I've got a success story this week. I had a client contact me a few months ago in distress because they had just flunked out of college. Depressing, right? Not when you contact PsychicAccess.com. I was able to steer this person in the right direction using my spirit guides and the tarot. And what do you know? I just got a call from the client this week to let me know that following my counsel, they were able to get accepted into another college and a more satisfying academic program. That's what psychic work is all about. But as usual, it's definitely not about me. I've got three other co-panelists here with me tonight. Very excited about tonight's program. We have Mary Lomando with us to discuss ancient signposts. But before we get started, please join me in welcoming my co-hosts. Maureen, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing okay. Thank you so kindly.
Oh, I'm very happy to hear that. Very happy to hear that. We're glad you could make it, as always. Can you describe a little bit about what you do over at PsychicAccess.com?
Well, I'm an intuitive empath psychic reader who utilizes tarot as her main tool, my main tool, as I feel tarot is a symbolic record of human experience. And I really enjoy what I do, especially spiritual development work. And I feel that my clients over there come back for more very, very much so just for that as well.
Right. Yeah, well, everyone, Maureen is definitely one of our most in-demand psychic advisors on PsychicAccess.com. By all means, point your web browser at PsychicAccess.com and book some time with Maureen. You'll be glad that you did. Moving on to Dr. Nona Marie, how are you doing this evening?
I'm great. I love your story. That was a great success story.
It was. The poor client, it was exhilarated, over the top. So it's always nice when things can work out well. And you know how stressful school can be and college and all that good stuff. It can be quite stressful, you know.
Yeah.
But you know what? If my client had called you instead, the person would have gotten a great result as well, because we've got a lot of consummate, talented professionals at PsychicAccess.com. So why don't you describe for our listeners a little bit about your talents and your skills?
I will. Thank you. I work as a psychic. I don't use any tools when I'm on Psychic Access. And more recently, I am also doing medium work. I also do animal communication. Sometimes people have called me up about their pets and what's wrong with their pets.
Ah, that's very interesting. I just adopted a kitten today. Maybe I need to lay him on your therapy couch and see if you can work out his issues. Oh, that's wonderful. We're very glad to have you here with us tonight. And finally, last but definitely not least, is my esteemed colleague and friend, Stephen Frampton. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing really well. Thank you, Stephen.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. You definitely have an intellectual feast laid out for us tonight. But before we get into talking about Mrs. Lomando, and before you start describing her, can you tell us a little bit about what you do at PsychicAccess.com?
Absolutely. I'm a psychic medium, so I connect with people that have passed to spirit, and I do quite a lot of criminal work nowadays, looking at law enforcement issues, and I'm also a hermetic astrologer. I like to use astrology to understand people and also to look at when things are most likely to occur. And as you know, I use my astrology also in criminal cases and other forms of consulting as well.
Absolutely. Very powerful duo, the psychic mediumship combined with astrology. Well, why don't you describe for us Mary Lomando and tell us a little bit about her?
Absolutely. Well, Mary is a Jungian astrologer, but she's also an Egyptologist. and she has more than 20 years' experience with psychology and metaphysics and world mythologies. So she's described as an archaeo-astrologer, and she's very much specialized in ancient Egypt and Peru. And I know many people that have had wonderful readings with her. She's wonderful at helping people to clarify their soul's purpose, focusing upon karmic relationship patterns, past life experiences, talents, and future potential. That's all described by the birth chart. And, you know, really combining astrological vision and intuitive guidance, she really helps people to engage in personal transformation. She's lived and worked in Egypt, where she received her degree in Egyptology, and she leads incredibly interesting trips to Egypt and Peru. She's also researching the archaeological and astronomical connections between these fascinating two ancient civilizations. And so Mary began Pachaterra travel as a way to share her love of sacred sites, travel, and Mother Earth with like-minded people. And I want to just remind our listeners that if they would like to read more about Mary, they can visit her website. It's Pachaterra, Pachaterra.com. Well, Mary, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Steve, and thank you, my esteemed friend and colleague and fellow astrologer. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mary. I'm excited to have you on the show, and particularly before you embark upon your next incredible trip to Egypt. And I wanted to mention that to our listeners to begin with, Mary, because I know that you lead these incredible and magical tours to Egypt. Can you tell us just briefly about your next trip, which is available to people that are interested so they can go on this trip if they want to? Tell us a little bit about what you have planned.
Well, yes, of course. Thank you, Steve. And just as a quick addendum, I will be in your neck of the woods also, in Nashville and Knoxville over the next week or two. So hopefully I'll get to see you and talk to some more people up there. What I'm doing with the November 2014 trip is actually doing an immersion, so that we're going deeply into the spiritual as well as the archaeology aspects of ancient Egypt. And I've amended the normal 14-day tour with the cruise and everything so that people can actually come and spend a full 9 days just in Luxor and Abydos, because I've had a lot of special requests for that over the past few years. And this is a great time to be in Egypt for two reasons. One, there's no crowds. It's, you know, the tourism is low, which is, you know, not great for the Egyptian side of things. But for us who want to do work specifically in certain sites and temples, it's pretty much wide open right now. And also, due to the same factor as it is not being overrun with tourists, there's a reduced cost aspect, which makes it very attractive to most people right now. So, you know, getting that little blurb out of the way, what we're doing in this particular trip is going for 11-11. We'll be in Cairo at the Sphinx and the Pyramids for November the 11th, and then we're moving on to Luxor and Abydos and doing a full, I call it the immersion journey. Some people call it initiation. To me, it's an immersion, because we really are deeply part of the matrix of ancient Egypt, as well as focused on the culture and the aspects of what's going on in terms of how the people live. And it's a cultural, you know, we live on the West Bank and we stay and go back and forth between the East Bank and the West Bank of the Nile. I have a house there, so people get to actually use that space as meditation with the Blue Lotus. So it's kind of a multi-dimensional, faceted tour, and really, people want more information, they could go to my website, as you said, at pachaterra.com, or they can just email me, Mary Lamondo, and they can find out everything they need to know. But I really do feel that Egypt right now is going through a transformational process
not just on the physical level, but there's a whole new grid. There's an etheric grid that's awakening, and that has been going on since the end of 2012. But as we're moving forward with all of these, as you know, as an astrologer, all of these grand trines and squares and amazing galactic alignments, what we're doing is we're actually pulling through more and more of the starry lineage that belongs to Egypt and awakening that thread in us as humans. So it's just, and it's fun to state the obvious.
Sounds it. Sounds incredible. Well, Mary, you mentioned the Blue Lotus, and I know that you are the person that reintroduced the Blue Lotus. So you actually are growing the Blue Lotus again in Egypt, which is incredible in itself. But can I ask you to explain to our listeners what the Blue Lotus symbolizes for Egypt and for all of us?
Well, as we know from the ancient Egyptian texts and the Book of the Dead, and also what's actually left to us in terms of the temple iconography and wall reliefs and paintings and tomb paintings, all of that good stuff that we can still see with our third-dimensional eyes, the Egyptians revered the blue lotus as the flower of immortality. And that saying where it takes a village to raise a child, it's kind of the same thing there. This is a team effort. There is a Blue Lotus Foundation with some really excellent people involved in this. And it is reintroducing it in the local environs. Back in the day, in Roman times, the flower itself was not propagated the way it was in the dynastic times of ancient Egypt, and it sort of went by the wayside. It is now growing and flourishing, and so we do believe that that's a symbol that there is a new awakening, that there is a new blossoming, that the new life force is being evolved, and Egypt is a portal. It's a doorway to many different dimensional gateways or stargates, if you will. And the idea of many, many ancient religions and philosophies, the lotus is always sacred, and it usually symbolizes the crown chakra. And in Egypt, it was the same. And it's this idea of if you can come up, it grows in the mud, comes up from the earth itself. And as we're part earth, and the part of us that is spiritual grows towards the light, opens to our divinity, and become one with the Godhead, that's universal in many ancient cultures, and the lotus is the symbol. In Egypt, we are lucky enough to be able to walk into a temple and see it, and now hopefully someday when there is, let's say, more of a standardized government that's willing to accept this in terms of antiquities and placing it and all of that stuff that goes with three dimensions, then we will be able to place those back in the sacred lakes and the temples once again. But for right now, symbolically, it's holding space for that new etheric grid that we've been talking about, which is happening all over the planet. But especially in Egypt, it's very potent, extremely potent at this point in time. So we are very fortunate and blessed to be able to have that blue lotus and be able to work with it and meditate with it there in Luxor.
It's wonderful, Mary. It's wonderful that you're doing that. Absolutely fascinating. I want to go back in time, Mary. I know, obviously, that you're an Egyptologist. I've always been very interested in the ancient Egyptian mystery schools and the process of initiation into the mysteries. Can you take us back in time and teach us a little about these ancient mystery schools?
Well, I think that might take us a lot more than the 40 or 50 minutes we have on the air. I'd love to take you back to Egypt, Steve. Someday that would be a great way to do it. In the few minutes that the few minutes that we have, it was interesting because many different we think of Egypt as in our again, our Western mind as ancient Egypt as one kind of lump sum, if you will. But really Egypt was spread out over thousands of years. And the different mystery schools, if you will, had different points of time and were devoted to different temples. And as we look at the Egyptian mysteries today in the Western mystical tradition, they come to us through the Greco-Roman period, through Greece mostly. So even that's been kind of tampered with a little bit and Hellenized. The ancient Egyptian mysteries, as the Egyptians knew it, probably come to us through Atlantis. And as we know, these epochs that we talk about are so far back in time that there really is no written documentation of this. And there's a lot of channeled information, there's a lot of esoteric information. But the idea of what a particular initiation was, no one really knows. I would assume that the closest we would get to it, even after years of study, is knowing that at some point that the initiates did go into the Great Pyramid of Giza, and that was considered very important in terms of overcoming death and becoming this idea of an immortal, light-bodied being. We see remnants of this even into Christian times when we talk about the resurrection of Jesus the Christ. There are so many parallels with the ancient Egyptian mystery schools and early Gnosticism and Christianity that we could go on and on just talking about that. But the idea, the most important thing in ancient Egypt was this idea of the raw material, if you will, of the human, let's call it that lotus seed in the mud. It's this idea of you come and you grow and you evolve, and through a transformational process of spending many years attached to a particular temple or a particular deity with a masterful teacher who showed you the way and guided you through the ranks, through sheer self-discipline and trial and error and the willingness of the spirit and the heart to open, something flowered, something woke up, and that was the individual coming forth into the light. Now, most of the time, that took years, and in some cases, it's lifetimes before that would actually be completed. Again, one of the things that's very interesting about being able to physically go into Egypt is usually an individual can somehow access past life information and individually retrace their steps. I call it opening the Hall of Records. I mean, most of us have past life remembrances, or we've been through regressions, and so we've kind of put together our own story in terms of past lives by the time we get to this stage of the game, because I'm sure most of your listeners are pretty well are familiar with metaphysical principles and different readings and past life information and so forth. So this idea is we're looking at two things. One is that the ancient Egyptians had a very prescribed method of doing it, very sacred, very hierarchical. It's like there was stages, and we see that even now in modern day Freemasonry. You don't go from stage 0 to 33. There are ways and means and ranks and initiations to pass to get to those. Now, in our modern everyday spiritual world, we don't have many of us, I should say, there are a few who do have the prescribed ranks and the rituals and the initiations depending on the orders that they belong to. But for most mainstream people, we are going by this really pretty much on our own steam. And so the best guide is to keep an open heart and to just really follow your intuition and to see where your interest lies in terms of a pathway. And if people are interested in ancient Egypt, there are many books written and so many different ways to go. I have a lot of students who find that they become interested in ancient Egypt and the magical initiation world through the goddess Isis and through reading books by Dion Fortune or getting into it through alchemy or astrology. It's everyone's path is different, but one of the things I like to say to students when they start is that pretty much anything that you're studying in the Western magical tradition comes from ancient Egypt.
Interesting. It's very, very interesting. I want to ask you, Mary, about the library in Alexandria. So we hear these stories of this incredible library that contained an enormous amount of information relating to metaphysics. Can you tell us a little bit about the library and what happened to that knowledge?
Well, again, it was an amazing place. Sometimes I like to go back in my own, inner hall of records and kind of fantasize about walking around through those arcane halls of the Library of Alexandria. I think I probably did spend some time there. But the idea is that there was a movement after Alexander the Great died and Ptolemy, his general, who inherited Egypt as his part of the empire that was divided up on Alexander's deathbed. And the Library of Alexandria was built not only to house what was the most important texts and writings of all the Egyptian culture that they had up until that time, but also Ptolemy gathered books from all over the empire. And remember that Alexander had conquered all the way to India. And so they were gathering texts from Greece, from Iran, Persia. They were gathering books as far east as India. The idea was to make Alexandria a learning center of the world, a capital of the world, and that's what the lighthouse symbolized. Remember the ancient Egyptian idea of coming forth into light. Light equals knowledge. And so Ptolemy prided himself on being this gatherer of this knowledge, and he started the school there at the library, and it was very much modeled on the Greek philosophers who those particular generals of Alexander had studied with, Socrates and Plato and so forth. So the arcane school of Alexandria was famous throughout the known world at that time, and people came from all over. They had Hasidic scholars and many, many different people studying there. And the idea was it was an ecumenical council of people. It just wasn't one nationality or one brand of knowledge. It was universal. And that continued all through the time of Cleopatra. Cleopatra was the seventh Cleopatra, and her ancestry goes way back to Ptolemy the First with the founding of the city of Alexandria. So we're looking at a literary heritage that was esoteric, spiritual, and historical all at the same time. And the closest we would probably come to it today would either be the Vatican Library or the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. But it was vast, and it was a huge academia, universal light. There were many reasons why it was not allowed to continue on after a certain period of time. There was major rifts between the Christians and the Platonic scholars in Alexandria, and mainly the Christians were not really, they believed that the library was a pagan institution and shouldn't be allowed to exist. And so the scholars were persecuted, in particular Hypatia, who was a very renowned woman scholar, astronomer, mm-hmm. and scientist of the time, was put to death very brutally. And so little by little, the door closed. Always in great periods of enlightenment, there's a huge window that opens so that humanity can make that leap, much like the window that's open right now in the 21st century of humankind. But what happens is that the shadow comes in, and it is all about ignorance and fanaticism and making their way the only way. And unfortunately, the Great Library of Alexandria did not survive what happened during the changeover from the time of, called the possession of the equinoxes, from the age of Aries into the age of Pisces. Now, they say during the time of Cleopatra, Julius Caesar had some naval battle going on in the port there, and that some of the library caught fire and burned. But the idea was that it wasn't all systematically wiped out in one fell swoop. It took time for it to degenerate in a sense, where it wasn't actually the texts that were burned and destroyed. It was the scholars that had to go underground and had to take their teachings elsewhere. Nowadays, about 4 or 5 years ago, the government of Egypt built the Antiquities Department under the auspices of Dr. Zahi Hawass, built an amazingly beautiful new library, pretty much devoted to the same principles. But unfortunately, the revolution in 2011 kind of put a lid on some of it. We're, you know, always looking optimistically at the future, and where that library once stood, the new library stands again. So again, that is a very hopeful sign for the future.
Mary, for those of our listeners that like to read, that like to research and delve into these fascinating sources of information, what's the closest we can get nowadays to the kind of material that would have been available or stored in the library in Alexandria? Do you have any recommendations for us?
Well, I think, you know, I'm a little prejudiced in this. I say go back to the classics and read the authors that were writing about this when Egypt was new, people like Wallace Budge, and there are that beautiful book by Doreo called The Emerald Tablets of Thoth, if you want an idea of how the ancient Egyptians and the Gnostic Alexandrians actually taught. They taught in parables with some very unique language. Another book that I always like to go back to, which is kind of like my textbook for all things, is called The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly Hall. When we talk to you, you must know that book as well, Steve.
What an amazing man. What an amazing man. He's one of those people that you would choose, isn't he? That if you really could have dinner with somebody that's no longer here, he's one of those people that would be high on the list.
Exactly. And as people are getting into their own research, it's like if you pick out someone like that and then you look at someone who's classic and noteworthy for the work and the research that they did, then there's a long list of footnotes and collaborators, and you know, you can index all that from reading one book. You can find out where your interest lies. I'm pretty much of that Alexandrian method of teaching. I don't really like to tell people too much about what to do, but the idea is there if you're looking for something. That's part of your quest. That's part of the initiation, is to follow your path. But modern day writers who are excellent in terms of piecing together some of these ancient wisdoms are people like John Anthony West, who's brilliant and written all about the sacred science of ancient Egypt, the symbolist theory. You know, there are so many books on Egypt. It's like, you know, looking at pebbles of sand on the beach. You can start anywhere and just keep going. But depending on what your interest is, you know, if people are interested in the alignment of the Great Pyramids and the astronomy of the cycles, and someone like Robert Bovall, a modern-day writer, is really good, and start with his Orion Mystery. There's many, many places to look for information on Egypt. The idea of the, and you probably know more about this than I do, researching the alchemical side of Egypt, you want to look into the Gnostic writers and some of the more Platonic Greek writers, and some of that takes you into books written in the Middle Ages. So it depends on how intense somebody's research nose is and how deep they want to go with it. But I'm happy to, again, if anybody emails me or finds me on Facebook or goes to my website, I'm happy to answer any and all questions pertaining to book lists about Egypt and all kinds of things. Usually when, if I'm teaching a class, it takes about a week to assemble a bibliography because there's just so many fascinating books about Egypt.
Amazing place, incredible place. Well, tell us, Mary, how does Thoth fit into all of this? We hear the name Thoth so frequently. Where does Thoth fit in? Who is Thoth?
Well, Thoth is the Egyptian god of wisdom, writing, and all things magical in terms of written work. So when we think of the hieroglyph, we think of a, on one level, a very third-dimensional notation of characters denoting Egyptian ideas, like we have letters in an alphabet. On another level, the idea of the ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs is that they're awakening something in the human mind, and as you perceive these forms, and they take you into, it's like opening having a code to take you into other levels of experience. And sometimes I've seen people stand in front of the hieroglyphs in Egypt, either on an obelisk or a wall or something, and get totally mesmerized. Thoth is the one who is purported to be the inventor of that language. Now, Thoth, as an ancient Egyptian archetypal netter or god, is also associated with astrology. He's associated with numbers, anything that comes along the science of mathematics. He's the be-all, end-all of all knowledge and wisdom in ancient Egypt. Some people believe that Thoth was a real being, that he actually was a physical incarnation on the planet who had come from Atlantis, and that he was, it comes to us as kind of a legend that he was instrumental in bringing a codified field of literature, language, and learning into Egypt from the civilization of Atlantis. Now, you can look at it that way. Some people think that Thoth is a being from another planet. Some people think that it is an age-old title, that it was a priesthood, that you inherited the title Thoth. And that Imhotep, the original grand vizier back in 3rd Dynasty Egypt, who is the one who built the first pyramid in Egypt, the stepped pyramid, that he was associated or synonymous with Thoth. Now, we can look at this many different ways. That's the great thing about Egypt. Everywhere you look in Egypt, there is a mystery. It's like, there's no stone unturned when it comes to finding mysteries. So whichever way we look at it, the Thoth is all about language, mathematics, higher mind information, and how it relates to the human condition. He has whole temples ascribed to his works, specifically the main one in Edfo talks about 9 books that were written and ascribed to Thoth. So we're looking at him in terms of the father of alchemy, the father of writing, and the father of magic. And that's just 3 of the titles. We can go on and on. I mean, if there's anything specific that you'd like, or you think maybe your listeners would like to know, I'd be happy to pick up on one specific.
Well, I think you need to be our go-to person for reading suggestions, for sure, for research. we need a good book to read. We'll have to get in touch with you and find out about all of these incredible things, Mary. I want to ask you about new discoveries, Mary. I know that you've got your finger on the pulse. You know what's going on. And we've all heard at some time or another of an archaeological discovery in Egypt. But can you tell us about the latest discoveries?
Well, it is interesting that there have been so many since basically what we hear in the West, especially in the United States, is all of the political news that goes on in Egypt. But interestingly enough, since the revolution, there have been more and more discoveries made because the archaeologists have had much more time and the freedom to go in there and kind of look around and excavate in places. There have been, especially in Abydos, entirely amazing discoveries going on. In fact, they found this year, a whole new pharaonic dynasty that they weren't sure even existed, and it's now confirmed. Pretty much during the middle period of Egypt, they had pharaohs who were living in the environment of Abydos as secondary rulers, while the Hyksos, who were invaders in the north, ruled from the northern part of Egypt. And it was kind of like a rebellion going on in the south until they finally overthrew the invaders in the 17th, 18th dynasty. However, this dynasty in Abydos that was just found is considered second intermediate, which is like 15th dynasty. And no one really knew who these pharaohs were. And suddenly, a few months ago, the University of Pennsylvania, I believe, started to excavate tombs where they re-excavate, where they knew who was buried, and they found some subsidiary tombs where they had never had any idea at all for burials. So it was really exciting on that level. Also, there are places on the West Bank that were excavated many years ago and then kind of, you know, written up, and people and the archaeologists moved on. Now they're finding that underneath some of those tombs, especially the 18th dynasty tombs connected to the reigns of Hatshepsut and Thutmosis III, they are finding tombs below those tombs that are, actually containing grave goods and mummies and things that haven't been seen in Egypt in a long time. So if you're interested in archaeology, it's extremely fascinating. Where my house is, I live pretty much on the West Bank in Luxor, close to all of the archaeological excavations going on, and within a stone's throw, I mean, there's like four or five concessions, and as you walk down the street going to the grocery store, you can see people digging and working and, finding stuff. It's just, it's incredible. It reminds me of the old days when Carter was in Egypt, and people were just all over the West Bank doing lots of things, excavation-wise, where for many years the excavations were pretty rigidly controlled, so there wasn't a lot of overt activity. But the past two summers, there have been a lot of archaeologists, especially American and Spanish, just really retooling the whole place, and they found some very interesting stuff. A couple of months ago, we saw in the on the internet and in the certain archaeology magazines the huge statues that were found, which were colossi, and they have now erected them, and they're standing, right there on the West Bank where they found them.
Wow.
So the whole
wow.
place is kind of like an open-air museum right now.
Wow, well, that sounds magical. Well, Mary, we're going to take a short commercial break just for a moment, and then we will come back and we'll be asking you more questions.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Well, Mary, I'm really enjoying the interview. You're extremely knowledgeable. I guess we would need a year with you, really, to just start to scratch the surface of your knowledge. And the trip to Egypt sounds absolutely fascinating. So I'll ask you a little bit more about that before we end the interview later on. But I do want to ask you about Sashata. You mentioned Sashata in an email to me, and I haven't heard of her. So I was interested to ask you if you could explain to us who Sashata is and why she's important.
Yes, well, fantastic, Steve. And I'm so glad you brought her up, because she's actually the consort, the female counterpart of the god Thoth. So as we have Thoth as the god of letters and magic and science, we have Sashada as the feminine counterpart, and she's called the mistress of the Hall of Records. And her specific task is she aligns the architectural guidelines when there is a temple to be erected. She's the one who, she's like the sacred architect, and she aligns with the stars. It's like she, if the pharaoh and the high priest have a particular, and this goes back to the mystery school teachings, a particular energy. Say they want to work with the energy of Sirius or the Pleiades, or they want to bring in the idea of Mars or Saturn. It's like they would set up what we would consider a pre-construction site, and they would call in the goddess Sashata, and they would actually have high priest and priestess work as Thoth and Sashata, work with the pharaoh and really meditate and bring in these coordinates for where, for the highest alignment of the temple. So Sashada is very connected to the star Sirius, and she is also connected to Isis. She's really a star goddess, if you will, and we feel her energy very much around the Great Pyramids. She's, again, depicted in every temple, and usually all throughout Egypt, wherever you see Sashata, there's something about it being connected to a specific teaching that had to do with an initiation or a mystery school or something that was having to do with astronomy or astrology. I love Sashata. And she's, this time of the year in the ancient Egyptian calendar, calendar that had to do with the star Sirius, we know that the Nile rose, and when the Nile rose in ancient Egypt, it was considered the new year. So Sothis as Isis, Sashada, all of these different names for the archetypal idea that as the stars were important to Earth, as above, so below, that the temples in Egypt, the energy, the actual, physical, tangible energy of the temples rose and fell with this idea of the Nile. And certain temples were only, parts of certain temples were only used when the Nile would rise during the new year. So she is a very important goddess, and once again, she's not one that's well known, not as well known as Isis or Sekhmet or Hathor, but if you were an architect or you worked having to do with anything in terms of temple design, let's say, then you were very much tuned into the energy of Sashata. Writers also, she's sometimes shown with a just like Thoth, with the palette and the scribe's pen in her hand. I've taken people to Edfu, actually, and there's a little alcove in Edfu Temple where you can go and see a beautiful depiction of her on the wall. And it's kind of like people, you know, kind of sneak in there and say a quick meditation and just kind of, you know, feel the energy and then leave again. But it really is sort of your own little private moment there with Sashada. I really love those little moments in Egypt.
Well, Mary, can you also tell us a little bit about the use of alchemy in ancient Egypt?
Well, yes, all of ancient Egypt, pretty much the name Egypt as we know it, the ancient land called Kemet, was all about alchemy. And in fact, the word alchemy comes from the name for ancient Egypt, which was Kemet. And the Egyptians believed, rightly so, as above, so below, and that their version of reality was not one-dimensional like ours is. They believed that everything was symbolic, hence we have the idea of the hieroglyphs and how they, again, can transport you into different realms just by looking at these pictographs. The idea of alchemy in Egypt was, let's take the temple, because it was widespread, an example of the temple. They would use stone. We already talked about the architecture being aligned with the stars. The different types of stone they would use. Stone carries properties. What they wanted to induce in the celebrant of these mysteries would be etched in the stones. They would use sound. They would use smells. They would use color. We think of ancient Egypt as kind of like the sandstone color of the temples, which it is now after thousands and thousands of years. But everything was colored and painted. The actual temples were brilliant colored. Nothing was sandstone like it is today. They were all painted. So we're looking at the beginnings of what we consider magic or alchemy and the healing process and all of that. It came from a very high level. They're talking about the transmutation of matter. Their alchemy is actually physics. What we get, you know, if you watch the Mummy movie on TV or something today, what we get is like spells and mummies and potions. And, you know, that was such a degraded, that was like way into the Roman times of what became degraded of the ancient Egyptian alchemy. The beginnings of it were the Great Pyramids and the Sphinx and these ideas of these great masterful beings who had this high enlightened knowledge at pretty much the beginning of recorded time. Where did that come from and how did they got it? How did they get it? Once again, that's one of the major mysteries of Egypt. Whether you look at it as, you know, men came, you know, gods who walked in from the west and settled in Egypt, or you think of it as people came in from the skies and settled Egypt, or it was just that these ancient Egyptians were perceptive and intuitive and highly motivated enough to bring in some very potent information during this window of time. We don't know. No one really knows. But the idea was that you can't argue with it. It was there to the point that the Greeks came in droves when they could towards the end of the New Kingdom into Greco-Roman times just so that they could sit at the feet of the Egyptians and learn all of this. I mean, we're looking at it 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years later. But during the time period where, let's call it the alchemy, was an ongoing thing. We've got Greek scholars. We have Middle Eastern, Persian, Iranian. We have people from all over, again, all over the known world coming into Egypt, and especially to Heliopolis, which was the city of the sun, the great temple at Heliopolis, to study and know these secrets. And that was the thing about Egypt. You know, the Egyptian priesthood said, you can come, we don't turn anybody away, but you have to prove yourself. Like, we're not going to, it's not pearls before swine. You have to prove that you're worthy of the knowledge. Your heart has to be as light as a feather to be able to perceive this knowledge. Hence the idea of the initiations. They didn't initiate you just to make your life difficult. They did it to prove that you were no longer connected to the third dimensional world. In other words, greed and jealousy and you know, all of the vices of being human would not hold you back or hinder you from your search and your quest for enlightenment. And basically, that's still an on, you know, any religion that doesn't teach that is really not spiritual. It's just about greed and holding people back. If you teach people that there is growth and heart, and through that you attain wisdom and enlightenment, well, then I think you're worthy to call yourself a religion or a spiritual practice.
I want to ask you, Mary, a little bit about archaeology and specifically the culture of archaeology or archaeologists, because there seems to be quite a stigma attached to archaeology and the extent to which archaeologists are or are not open to, how can I put it, the possibilities of
the alternative
our origins.
Theories.
Sorry, Mary.
Yeah, I think I just paraphrased you there, but how Orthodox archaeologists are not open to some of the more alternative theories?
Yes. Yes, I mean, even there was a news article earlier this week about a cave painting discovered in India, 10,000 years old, and it's quite clearly a cave painting of an alien, of some alien creatures, and a UFO. And mm-hmm. archaeologists are baffled by this, but anybody that looks at the cave painting would say, well, this is pretty obvious.
Right. Well, you know, and again, archaeology, like any prescribed branch of science, has its rules that it has to follow. And, you know, I've known some, you know, pretty open-minded archaeologists, but most of them have to follow the company line, which is science. It's like it has to be very objectified. It has to be proven. It has to be researched. And if you fall out of line, you know, if you color outside the lines, you fall out of grace with the powers that be, which means that you don't get recognized, you don't get published, you don't get recognized by the authority figures that are, you know, the head of that particular branch of science. And, you know, most archaeology is funded by, you know, big universities, or, you know, the days of private people funding archaeology is pretty done with because it's so expensive. And that was the 18th century, not the 21st century. But they really do have to toe the academic line. That's it, basically. And then, you know, they don't want to get branded by being, you know, for lack of a better word, a pyramidiot. You know, they really can't have a lot of truck with what they consider fantasy, which is, you know, the UFO stuff or, you know, Atlantis. And, you know, I mean, I've been going back and forth to Egypt for 20 years, and so it's a fine line between being an avid Egyptologist, which means I understand archaeology, and I get thrilled at the prospect of seeing how the history is actually being proven and moved back farther. So, in other words, the history of the world is changing as we know it. Just in our lifetimes, you know, we're seeing all these amazing things. Now, the sad thing about science is that it takes them ages to catch up with all of that. So, in other words, things are being discovered, and, you know, if you put two and two together, you can kind of say, oh, yeah, great, you know, cave painting. Oh, yeah, okay, proves, you know, alien interaction with human beings. Great. Now, you know, an archaeology person probably can't even fathom that for, you know, another 100 years or so, because there's nothing to support that evidence. So if they can't prove it, it doesn't exist. I mean, you know, we all know that story about how the, you know, the Catholic Church, the Catholic hierarchy just forgave Galileo for being a heretic, for saying that there were nine planets or something. You know, I mean, it's crazy, but science is always on one. Technology is always on the cutting edge, but the paradigms of moving thought sometimes take a longer time to catch up. John West says it's great. You know, they were a lot smarter than we are. It's just we don't recognize that. You know, the ancients knew a lot more than we give them mm-hmm. credit.
We think that we're just progressing all of the time because we're continuing, we're moving forward. But in actual fact, that's not necessarily the case. Well, Mary, I want to thank you for such a wonderful interview. You're an incredibly smart, incredibly knowledgeable lady. We're running out of time, but before we wrap up, I do want you to just remind people of your website, how they can find out about scheduling an appointment with you at any point in the future. There is a profile for you on the Psychic Access Talk Radio website, and people can access you through that. But also tell people a little bit about how they might find out more about this fascinating trip you have planned later this year.
Okay, great. Well, they can contact me directly. My email is mlomondo@bellsouth.net. They can contact me by just Googling my name, Mary Lomondo, and the website and everything else pops up. They can find me through Psychic Access. They can call my number, which is the trip number, at 954 972 5891. And the itinerary and all the information is on my website. This special option, the immersion Luxor Abydos option that I'm speaking about, they need to talk to me personally about that, because that's pretty much for handpicked people. It's a little different than the normal trip. But I would love to talk to anyone who's interested. It promises to be spiritual and fun at the same time.
Excellent. And I know you do these trips at other times, Mary, and trips to Peru, so people can find out what's planned by checking out your website. Well, Mary, thank you once again for joining us. It's been absolutely brilliant. I'll certainly be listening to the interview again, because you covered so much. I want to listen again to absorb everything you've shared.
Thank you so much, Steve, and thank you all out there, and have a great evening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you very much. Well, what a wonderful interview. That's definitely one to listen to again in the archives. We have so many there now, Stephen, don't we? I'm not sure how many shows we have got there, but it must be in excess of 200 now.
Years worth of shows. You know, the archives at PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com really are a resource, is what they are. Those archives represent a sort of a miniature metaphysical university, don't they? That's the way I look at it.
It's a mini Library of Alexandria in audio format.
Oh my God! Yeah, we were just talking about that recently. I was voicing my wish, my dream of going back in time to visit the Great Library at Alexandria, Egypt, the repository for all of the ancient world's brilliance. But I tell you what, Steve, before we get into the banter here, I just want to make a few quick announcements. We'd like to remind everyone that if they are interested in learning more about Mary Lomondo, if they're interested in booking a reading with Mary, then you can find her at pachaterra.com. That is PachaTerra.com. Now, we are far from finished here, folks. We have an entire hour left where you can get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We're going to announce that call-in number in a bit, so be sure to have your pen and paper handy. If you couldn't get to our last week's show, do not worry. You'll find a recorded archive link, as well as archives of all the previous shows, what Steve and I were just talking about, sort of like a miniature psychic university, on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com under the Archives tab. Please feel free to circulate the archive links and future show details to your friends and family. What we want to do is to connect with as many of you as possible, so please share that link. Also, visit psychicbloggers.com, another sort of miniature university for psychic topics, where you can learn about everything from the paranormal to reincarnation to the how-tos of psychic development. That site is psychicbloggers.com. Run there now and check it out. You'll be glad you did. If you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com, where you will find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with his or her own unique gift. Each psychic has a detailed profile for you to find out more about them. So you can choose from a list of some of the most authentic, gifted psychics around. It's an honor working with Doug and Psychic Access because of the high expectations and ethics required of each psychic in this proud, scam-free zone. All of the co-hosts here on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com work at Psychic Access. And if you'd like a personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit us at PsychicAccess.com. We would love to hear from you. By the way, site owners, webmasters, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading on traffic referred to PsychicAccess.com. For more details, visit PsychicAccess.com/webmasters. If you like our show, and we sincerely hope that you do, by all means, invite your friends to join us in our chat room and listen to the Psychic Viewpoint. There's something for everyone, so spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Back to you, Steve.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for all of those reminders and for telling everybody about all of the incredible resources that are available at Psychic Access and Psychic Access Talk Radio. I often, when I have time, listen to one of our radio show archives, look at the blogs and psychic bloggers, etc. Well, Maureen, I want to talk to you first. I know that you're a huge fan of Egypt. How did you enjoy that incredible interview with Mary?
Oh, well, I thought it was lovely. I'm pretty sure my understanding was, when I was listening to it, the first thing I heard, that she said that she's doing a cruise, correct? On a cruise? Is that what she was talking about?
I think they do take a cruise, perhaps, yes, during the trip, but it's not a trip that's always on a boat. They take a cruise down the Nile, I think, but they spend a lot of time visiting the pyramids and these great temples.
Right. Well, when I heard that, I was under the impression that she was one of the trips down there, and they were focusing on 11/11.
Yes.
Okay. And there was so much information. I need to listen to that interview again.
It was
very good, and there was so much insight and everything. And remember when Brenda was on? You know, Brenda was an avid traveler. I think she had gone a couple of times or something like that. But I really enjoyed her talking about some of the less known goddess. What's her name?
Yes, Sesshata.
Yes.
Sesshata.
Yeah, I remember we used to do a goddess. Remember years ago when we were, when we were on, Steve, you and I have been here a long time, we would do a goddess section. I remember I was in charge of the goddess section. I remember running into that one that was less known, and I always liked the underdog goddesses or whatever. And she was just full of so much great information. It just makes it more so inspiring to where I would, I don't like having bucket lists, I guess to call it, but that's one list I would like to keep. It's at the top, Egypt.
And I have to go back, Maureen, and listen to the interview to get those reading recommendations. And I must ask Stephen about those in a moment.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So it was great. It was a fantastic interview, Steve. And thank you for bringing her on as a guest. It was lovely.
Thank you, Maureen. Thank you. Well, Stephen,
yes, sir.
You're a man that likes to learn.
Absolutely.
Have you heard of Manly P. Hall?
I have heard of Manly P. Hall. Manly P. Hall actually is sort of, I don't want to say famous, you know what I mean? But if you spend any time studying occultism of any sort, astrology, tarot, or whatever it may be, you're going to come across the works of Manly Palmer Hall. So his books are, I mean, that's the sort of name that you constantly come across when reading more contemporaneous and more modern authorities. You know, it's like everyone references him, and for good reason. I want to say he was a Rosicrucian, belonged to a Rosicrucian fellowship, which is, I'm definitely far from an expert on Rosicrucianism. However, it's quite complex, and it's been developed since the turn of the last century. So it's a towering influence in occultism. You know, Steve?
Yes, absolutely. What's your feeling on Rosicrucianism versus Freemasonry?
With Rosicrucianism, Freemasonry, any sort of organized system of occultism, my opinion is that you run into the same sorts of problems that you encounter in your more conventional churches, mosques, and synagogues. And that problem is orthodoxy and dogmatism. And so, paradoxically, ironically, once the Rosicrucians and the Theosophists and the Golden Dawn and the Ordo Templi Orientis or whatever they call themselves, once you get past the surface novelty of it, you find that you might as well just be going to church. What we do, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, what we do transcends dogmatism. Once you get to the point where you start jealously guarding a doctrine, where you start, assigning an exclusivity to the doctrine, where this is for us as opposed to the rest of the profane people, then once you start doing that, then I think you're really actually deviating from the path of true spirituality. And instead of embarking on an initiation, and I use that term formally, as the ancient Egyptian priests would have used it. Once you get involved with some of these groups, then it's quite possible to actually abandon the path of true initiation. However, the benefit of organized spiritual systems is that they can be quite enlightening. They have a system. They approach spirituality with the rigor and the discipline of the scientific method, some of these groups. So it's a mixed bag.
Absolutely. It's so interesting. I was in DC working for a few days. I flew there on Thursday, flew back Monday. And whilst I was in DC, I watched a really interesting documentary about the layout of the of DC and the all the sacred geometry, all of the symbolism and the Scottish Templars a temple there to the north, which seems to be towards the apex of the pyramid formation. Really, really interesting stuff. I think one of my concerns nowadays is that there's just so much to learn. How on earth will we manage to get through it all in one little lifetime? I guess we just won't.
No, we won't. And you know what? I don't think I would want to. Because for one thing, there are a couple of philosophical problems with not having anything left to learn. This puts you on an intellectual par with God or the Creator. And such a thing is a paradox. Philosophically, it can't happen. Because if there's no distinction between us and the Creator, then, you know, what does that say? It could say that we, in fact, are creators, which we are, but this is more in conformity with the as above, so below maxim. It's not so much, we humans, in order to define ourselves in the universe, in my opinion, again, this is just my opinion, we humans really need to distinguish ourselves from the divine because we are not yet divine, despite the modern trends and referring to ourselves as God-like creatures. I don't believe this is the case. Every time I turn on the nightly news, I'm actually convinced of quite the opposite.
Yeah, we always think we're soulless as a collective species.
And you know, as a species, we're only as strong as the weakest link in the chain. So individually, we might be proud of our spiritual progression. However, as long as there are primitive humans who think that it's acceptable to visit atrocities upon others, then we're no better than they are. What was I saying before I so rudely interrupted myself? Oh, yeah, we were talking about running out of things to learn or mm-hmm. something of that nature. And, you know, for me, it's just such a huge comfort when I perceive the depth and the breadth of this tradition that's been left to us, this tradition of occultism that we've inherited, and it's a tradition that is thousands upon thousands of years. I love to compare all of us to actually lawyers. You know, in a way, what we do is very intuitive, very psychic, but there's another face to it as well, because a lot of times I find myself justifying my judgments by referring to some anterior astrologer, such as Bonatti or Abu Mashar, or, you know, someone like that. So in that respect, I'm very much like a lawyer citing prior case history in order to make a case for today. And I think that's important, the body of knowledge that we have available to us that emanates not only from the Greeks, but before them it came from Babylon, went to the Greeks from, I keep saying Greeks, I mean Egyptians. It went from the Babylonians to the Egyptians, from the Egyptians to the Greeks. And, you know, so the whole region supplied a lot to the architecture, this glorious edifice of knowledge that we benefit from today.
Thank you, Stephen. I really appreciate your intelligent comments and observations. Nona, have you been to Egypt?
No, I wish I have, but no, I have not. I actually almost went one year, but I believe war broke out or something along those lines, and the trip got canceled, and that was the end of it. I was actually going to go on a horseback and ride out to pyramids that are inaccessible by any other method except horseback. So I was very disappointed.
Well, you must go. It's somewhere that I have never been to, but I've traveled a lot, but I have not been there. I would love to go. Are you interested in the mystery schools and the incredible archaeological sites in Egypt?
I am, but I'm not overwhelmed by Egyptian history. I think I've been more drawn to the early goddess religions, a little bit of paganism, and Taoist sorcery. But I love Egyptology, and actually my first tarot deck that led me into spirituality and readings was an Egyptian deck.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, after that, that was as far as I ever got with Egypt. But your guest was an unbelievable wealth of information. It was just fascinating. So I may end up going on a reading binge based on her information now.
Yes, yeah, she's very, very knowledgeable. Really interesting combination as well, you know, to a person that specializes in both astrology and Egyptology. I find that just an exquisite combination.
I agree, yeah.
Excellent. Well, Maureen, let me bring you back in on the debate, because I know that you've got lots to say about Egypt. Have you been there? I don't think you said you haven't.
No, I haven't. Maybe in a past life, but I don't remember. And I probably wasn't any royalty figure, but you know what always fascinates me about...
You know I was a prostitute in Egypt, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I
told you about that.
I think it, we crossed paths during that time.
Oh, we were hookers. We were. Remember, we used to work together on Saturday nights. We used to stand in the street together and drink Egyptian vodka.
Yes, it was. Those were the days, you know.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was fun. Well, you know, watching those people, those incredible people, unbelievably. Create these pyramids that I have no idea mathematically how they could possibly. It does fascinate me that if anything, I mean, I would love to see a lot of things all over there. I mean, Egyptology, everything behind that. But when I really focus on the mind about or wrapping my mind around watching or looking at everything, you know, geometrically speaking, that is what gets me every time.
Yeah, all the connections with sacred geometry and the flower of life on one of the temples. I can't remember which.
Right. Not only that, it's the pyramids. I mean, my gosh. I mean, who does that? Or who can pull that off at that time period?
Well, Maureen, if you remember, you and I came up with the idea and the whole plan of how to do it. But unfortunately, after that vodka, didn't we mention it to one of your clients?
We didn't get the credit that was deserved. And, you know, I think perhaps maybe we need to, karmically speaking, that needs to be, you know, lived out in a better way. So...
Well, we're above it, Maureen. You know, we're professionals. We've always been professionals.
See, I just love
different roles.
The proper English sense of humor here is exactly a direct reflection of Steve Frampton. I love it. You're great.
You too.
So, Steve, when are we going? When are we going?
When are we going to go? I think we do need a team vacation, team trip.
Great. That would be fantastic.
We did meet in LA that time, but we need to do something else.
And I feel that Egypt should be the top of the list. You know, like I said, I remember like when Brenda was on, she'd been there so many times, but I just, so let's go. We'll plan on a trip. Maybe all four of us should go.
Well, I understand that Psychic Access is going to be sending us to Egypt, all of us.
Oh, really? That's lovely. Then.
They don't know it yet. They don't know it yet.
Wow.
Well guys, we're going to start taking readings in a minute, but Stephen, could you remind everybody of the telephone number before we do get started?
Absolutely. That would be my pleasure. Thank you very much, Steve. The call-in number for readings will be 724-444-4851. I will repeat that, but I just want to remind everyone that every call is going to automatically be placed on hold, answered in the order received. So just try to relax, listen to the show while you wait. Now, once you get on the air and you're able to ask your question, we ask that you make it one question. So while you're waiting, spend that time thinking about what you absolutely have to walk away from this reading knowing. Okay, so again, that number is 724-444-4851. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you. Well, in fact, you know, let me come back to you, Stephen.
Sure.
I know you've traveled a lot and you spent a lot of time in Latin America. Did you spend time in Peru?
Oh, I lived in Peru.
You lived in Peru
for a very long time. Oh, yeah.
In this lifetime or when you were an Inca?
No, in this lifetime. When I was just a boring old white dude descended from Scots.
So did you visit the incredible sites in Peru, Machu Picchu?
I did, and I'll tell you something. They're just the tip of the iceberg. What an enterprising people. And it's very interesting, the relation between Machu Picchu and the Great Pyramid at Giza. They actually share a very I don't want to say it's definitely not a coincidence. They share a geographical or geometrical type of relationship where they're on the same sort of a line, you know. So these two societies are quite similar to one another, and especially in the sense that their religious systems were very advanced and worked out to a complex degree, but also quite grisly. Egypt is sort of paradigmatic because it's the foundation of all Western monotheism. And so in that regard, the Peruvian religions, the religions of the Inca and the other ethnically related people indigenous to that area, man, they've got some dark gods in that. And I'll tell you something, Steve. I don't want to say novel concepts, because human sacrifice was practiced by pretty much in all geographical areas. However, there's something about their religion that is just, it's hard to capture, hard to describe, but it's alien. Do you see? In a way, it's related to the other Middle Eastern religions, but there's something about it, and not only the religion of the Incas, but also that of the Aztecs and Maya. There's something about it that's just downright extraterrestrial. And let me add that if you travel to Peru, the last thing you should do, it's very rude to talk to the aliens about, talk to the natives about aliens in the sense of, you know, suggesting that their great cultural works were in fact the product of aliens instead of their own ingenuity and hard work. That's a big no-no. So if you go to Peru, you definitely don't want to do that.
Well, right. Good advice, Steve. Somewhere I definitely want to go in time as well.
It's a lovely place. It's magical. I mean, the big thing about Machu Picchu and the other structures related to it is, I mean, how do you affect an agriculture at those altitudes, in which, in fact, they did? Let's think about all the wonderful vegetables that came to us that we would not have had were it not for the Incas. Tomatoes, potatoes, and probably some other things. So, we associate tomatoes with Italy, but no, they were founded and they developed in the Andes, in Peru. So, you know, all that construction at such an altitude. I mean, if you go to the Andes, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. You will get sick as a dog, more than likely. They have a deceptively pretty word for the altitude sickness. The locals, they call it soroche. And, you know, if you get soroche, that altitude sickness, you will never forget it. And we're talking about a place where they sell oxygen the way that, you know, they sell Coca-Cola here. You know what I mean? So when you think about it, how on earth did they entice plants to grow? You've got to feed people to build these amazing structures in the summit of the Andes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, involvement, doesn't it?
It either reeks of alien involvement, divine intervention, which the two probably... Or the two are arguably not different, or again, and you know, it points to the extreme ingenuity and discipline of the people, which, you know, this is Occam's razor. The simplest solution is probably the truest one. However, even if this is the case, even if Machu Picchu, even if the Great Pyramid of Giza, even if these structures have been erected due to human ingenuity, why did they do that? So it's very interesting. Why would they go through this? Okay, so I think actually we have to cut this short because we have a caller from New York for Maureen.
Yes.
Hello, New York. This is Maureen. Hi. Hello?
Hi.
Hi, may I have your name, please?
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Kristen.
Hi, Kristen. And what can I do for you?
I actually have a question about, I'm going to be moving soon, and I've just kind of, the whole process is kind of like up in the air, and I'm struggling with, you know, money, and I'm not even sure how I'm going to pull this off, but, I was just wondering, you know, how it'll work out. I mean, there's two properties that I kind of like one is on, like a Willett and the other is Morton, but
okay.
I'm not sure if you could tell me.
I understand. You're actually what you're seeing is, or you're saying, what you're saying is that you would like to know, and I know you, I can feel your anxiety, of course, if you're going to be settled in a place that is perfect for you at this time, right? And
yeah,
that pretty much sum it up. I know that you've been, because I understand what you're saying. Is it, are you moving, you're not moving by choice, are you?
I'm moving to take a job.
Okay, so you are moving by choice. So that's, should feel, you know, it's interesting. This is what I'm getting. Oh, actually, you know what? This job is going to be really, I know you didn't ask about this, but you're really going to be able to show what you got going on, which is great. Anyway, what I'm seeing here is that you said there were two places already, but I do feel that there's something else, and I feel it's going to be a third option that maybe you haven't checked into, and I see you needing to maybe reach out. Just, I'm not saying, I'm encouraging you to do so. I'm just feeling that there's a third option, and I feel also that it's somewhere you don't feel that would be appropriate. And I see a woman around that's connected to this place, a woman, so you'd be dealing with a woman, and she's very successful. She's a really great, her energy is very great. I wanted to ask you something. Did you find out about, or it looks like January was a really great hard-earned victory for you, to where, did you know ahead of time that you would want to be where you're going towards now? I don't know how far away or relocated or whatever it's going to be, but it just looks like this is just, it's going to be really fantastic. And I don't feel that you're not going to find what you want, but I do feel that there's a woman that's connected with this. She might be the owner of some small guest house or something like that. It just looks really, really positive. She has dark hair.
There was a roommate situation I was looking at, but I was unsure about that, like, altogether.
Oh, I'm sorry. I kind of lost you for a minute.
Like,
you were checking to see about maybe living with a roommate. But
yeah, and it was a roommate with a girl who is, she's doing a residency at a hospital.
Uh-huh. Okay, which they're gone all the time. A roommate like that is not around all the time.
Yeah. So, I mean,
well, that, you know,
that's mind when you brought up.
You'd ideally want to be on your own or not living with a roommate, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, if...
I mean, I'm not against it, but...
Right. But that, if there, I just feel there's some third... Like, because you did say two, there's two, as I understand, but I just see a third one that's really going to be the one, and I really feel this is going to be the best one. Like I said, I do see a woman connected with it, but I'm not saying that it's a roommate, but perhaps it could very well be, but she, that would be the ideal roommate if you were to go in a roommate situation. A person doing the residency, and you know, for being a doctor, they're never home. I know this because of...
Right, yeah.
I mean, you couldn't get an ideal roommate, is what I'm saying. It's kind of like,
yeah.
Like I said, so if like, I just feel that being open to something else, so it's, I see this going, I feel that you're really going to be empowered by where you're going to be living. It'll feel just perfectly. But I don't, between the two that you gave me, I feel that there's like I said, there's a third option here. So,
okay.
Either way, you know what? I know it's easy for me to say everything's going to just work out as it should, but I understand that your anxiety or you're anxious and things are going on, but where you're going to be working and everything, it looks fantastic. It's going to, do you have time period? Do you have a time period that you need to get to this? Do you have a time frame?
Yeah.
You must
be. I need to be there before September 8th.
Okay. I don't, you know what? I see late August. I see definitely you'll be there before. I see you settled in. And it looks like you're having a hard time sleeping, and I feel for you. I mean, something, it's like interrupted sleep. This is, you know, keeping you. Well, this is, I absolutely see you being, knowing where you're going by in the, you know, third week of August. So I guess I'd like to say keep an open mind, and I'm not saying the other two are not positive, but keep an open mind. Maybe for there's a third option here. Definitely.
Okay.
Okay. I hope I helped you. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
All right.
Thank you very much, Maureen. If you would like a reading with Maureen, by all means, look her up at psychicaccess.com. She will help you. Now, I have a caller from Ohio. I want to say hello, Ohio.
Hello.
Hi, yes. How are you?
Hi. I'm fine, and how about you? I have a question. I've been looking for a pickup truck,
right.
And I wonder, do you see me finding one? Or if you don't want to answer that, I'm wondering, do you see me going back into reading tarot cards again?
All right, well, let's see here. I'll tell you what, let's find out about the pickup truck and go from there. I see you getting the pickup truck. That's the good news right there. I see that as far as the pickup truck question is concerned, the worst parts are sort of behind you, as it were. And so the king of the air element is the next step. And this guy is the banker. This is the person or the banker or the seller, somebody connected to the financial transaction. And I tell you what, in reference to your other question about perhaps getting into reading tarot cards again, we have the reversed Ace of Coins here. Now, this is the air element as well, and this makes me think, there could be alternate, you know, for one thing, it's definitely going to represent the expenditure of the pickup truck, spending the money on the truck and the payments for it. But on the other hand, it's going to represent the beginning also of new finances that come into you as well. So it's looking like a good future as far as these questions are concerned for you, okay?
Do you see it shortly?
Well, it's on the timeline, so I'm going to judge that it's probably not shortly from your definition, but shortly from my definition. Let's say 4 to 5 months or around there. We're talking about a process here, okay? Not an event, but a process.
Okay.
So we're talking months instead of a day or a week.
Okay, because I know we bought him one, but it's a stick shift, and he's afraid to drive it, so we're looking for an automatic now, so...
Yeah. Oh, as far as the vehicle's concerned, you're going to get what you want, and it's going to be successful as far as that's concerned, okay?
Yeah. God bless you, and thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Likewise. Same to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we have a caller now from Florida for Nona Marie.
Hello, Florida.
Hello.
Hi. What's your name?
My name is Lisa.
Lisa, how can I help you today?
Okay, sorry, let me take you off my speakerphone. I didn't mean to put that on.
No problem.
Okay, now you'll be able to hear me better. Yes, thank you. I'm calling to find out what you see for my finances and a possible move or relocation. Thank you.
Okay. Finances feel good, not great, but good. Everything feels to me like it's going to be very stable for you up until about March of next year. And then it feels like you're going to have a little bit of disruption coming in with finances. It feels to me like there's your work situation or a partner's work situation is going to change. The finances aren't going to get bad then, but they're going to take a little bit of a dip. So knowing that, I would say in this time period, be careful with money so that when that little dip comes, you have a little bit of a nest egg going on. And a move. So what exactly do you want to know about a move? Like, will it be successful? Is it a good move? What?
Well, do you see me moving?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you had a move already planned in mind. That move, that feels related to the March dip in finances. So, yes, I think you will be. But, again, it's quite a ways away, not, you know, years and years. But it does feel like in March you'll be moving. And it almost feels out of state, but like, close by. In other words, not across the country out of state, but like the next state over kind of move. And it does feel like it is a combination of work-related and also has something to do with some family issues and wanting to be a little bit more accessible for some family issues that will be up and coming. I want to say the family issues, it will be a bit of a crisis. It will not be a horrible crisis, though. It will pass. It will work out fine, but it will be a little bit breathtaking at the time also. So in other words, you'll have a scare, but it won't end up in anybody crossing over or anything like that. So I would say, given all of this, enjoy the rest of this year as much as possible. Put away a little bit of a nest egg. And then that little kind of this little dip that's coming in March, it'll be over by June. So it's not long, but it is a little bit intense.
Okay.
So anything else I can help you with? I think actually we're supposed to only do one question. So.
Okay, thank you.
Is that enough information for you? Did that help?
Yeah, that helps. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Thank you very much for that reading, Nona Marie. You can find Nona at psychicaccess.com. We have a caller now from Massachusetts for Steve.
Thank you, Stephen. Who's calling from Massachusetts?
This is Stephen.
Hello, Stephen. How are you?
Good, good. How are you and the others doing?
Very well. Thank you, Stephen. Very well. How can we help?
I need to know, am I going to move to a new apartment that's going to be comforting to me, where I'm going to find work?
Let's have a look. When you say that, I'm drawn to the month of March intuitively, so I don't feel as though it's imminent. And, you know, when I look at the cards as well, they say that to me, Stephen. So, you know, the cards are saying to me that you've got to be careful with your finances. So you need to ensure that whatever you're planning, any choices you might make are appropriate for your financial situation. That's not to say your finances are bad necessarily, but I feel like you need to really try to put some money aside and just build up a greater buffer financially. I feel that if you just go out there and find, you know, the ideal property, but stretch yourself financially, it could be problematic. So I feel that your primary concern here has got to be finances. And the other issue is that the cards are showing to me that you have some financial entanglements with a female, and it's not a positive situation. In other words, this female it could try to disadvantage you financially. So this is what I sense, and this is what the cards are saying to me, that your primary focus needs to be upon your financial situation. It seems to me that now is a time not to try and expand and you know, increase your expenses, but to conserve and make cautious financial moves. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, well, I got to conserve because I'm not working right now.
Okay. Yeah, you've got to be careful. So I, as I said to you, I was drawn to March, and I feel that the answer to your question is March, but it's obviously, 8-9 months away. We're approaching August, so it's not imminent, but certainly it's something you can look forward to for next year. All right?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, Stephen. Good luck to you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Thank you very much. If you would like a reading with Steve, by all means, contact him at psychicaccess.com. We now have a caller from New Jersey for Maureen.
Thank you. Hello, New Jersey. This is Maureen.
Hello.
Hi. May I have your name, please?
Anne.
Hi, Anne. And what can I help you with?
In spring of 2013... I was in a train coming to New York from my parents' place in New Jersey, and I just looked out the window. We were passing some body of water, and I saw this thing on a boat, and it said group therapy. And I got the impression that might have been, you know, the angels giving me advice, but I never figured out what they meant by it.
It would. You said the boat said group therapy?
There was a little boat that said group therapy on it. Am I making this up?
I understand what you're saying. You're talking about people. Listen up. Hear me roar about this one. This is a good example. Everybody should pay attention to signs or symbols or things they see. And this is exactly what you're talking about. So you see this, and no one else may be connected to it. But so what you're at? What's your question about this? So this was from 2013.
Yeah. I just didn't know what that sign. I just want to make sure that it was actually a sign, that I'm not reading too much into it, and also I don't know what it meant.
Well, it could mean that group therapy would have been. Okay, are you open to group therapy? What do you do in your work? It could have a direct reflection in your work or something, but I mean, so from 2013. You mean you've been thinking about this, so it's interesting. It's still on the top of your mind. It's still in the front of your mind. So my feeling is, or what I'm seeing is, there's something about maybe along the way you made a not such a great choice, or maybe not the right choice, with some situation that I see that has to do with your past or connecting with someone from your past. And a lot of times, let's go right into this group therapy thing, sometimes we need to have help or insight or direction or whatever. And I'm not saying that you need this, but I'm going to ask you something about you. Are you one that group therapy, when you see that word or you hear that two words, group therapy, what does it feel like? Does it feel like, oh, that's kind of cool, I'm interested in anything to do with therapy or, you know, helping myself or bringing things together? What's the first thing you feel when you think of that? Those words.
What, a group therapy?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think of being in therapy with a group of people.
Okay. And so, I mean, do you think negative or positive is what I meant? You know, because...
Well, it's positive, and okay. I've actually been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, which is, I don't know if you know what it
right.
is. It's
yes,
very
I'm
high
familiar.
Functioning
yes,
autism.
I am familiar.
And I did attend, this was not therapy, but there was a support group in Manhattan, which I attended a couple of times and wasn't too sure I connected with people. But that wasn't really therapy per se as much as a support group.
Well, that is a therapeutic situation, environment for you. I feel that I just feel that there was a connection with this because, you know, what I see coming for you in right now, I mean, it'd be advantageous for you to be in a situation where when you went to this, was it only one time, a support group, whatever, or I call it a group. It's like a therapeutic support group. Did you feel good?
No, it didn't seem to do much for me.
But you tried it only one time, correct?
Well, I tried it twice. I can't do it right now because of my work schedule.
Well, you know, I feel that maybe there's something to this because what I'm seeing here is I just see that choice may have not been the right choice, and it does feel like dealing with some stuff from the past. And I see by going and trying, if you would be open to going and participating in a group situation for your psyche, it would be so positive. I see a big burden coming off your back. I feel that it would be unbelievable. And it would also help in your work situation, I feel, for whatever reason, because I just feel lighter. My heart feels lighter feeling, and you know, I'm doing this reading.
I don't know what situation they're talking about it though.
Well, I would just be open to exploring some things about maybe things that you have found that would normally not, you wouldn't be attracted to. I just feel that, I am seeing something here that's about dealing with some things from the past and group therapy or working on or taking a class on something that's like more enlightening, you know, more deep and such like that. I would just be open to that. Maybe that's why it's always stuck in your mind since 2013. Anyway, I hope I did the best I could with this. It was hard, a little difficult, but I feel that there's reasons for everything we see. signs, then pay attention. And you have.
Okay. Was that an actual sign, though? Do you see that as an actual sign?
Yes, I do. I absolutely do feel it's snap. Absolutely. And you said you kind of have done a support group. That's something I feel is very important. You gave it, okay, once or twice. That's not enough time. I feel it would be very... I feel it would be to your best interest, and it would be very positive, and you would not be disappointed if surrounding yourself in whatever that is, whatever type of group or support or whatever it is, you'll find it. And I feel that maybe it wasn't a good choice to stop doing that. Maybe you'll find a different one, you'd feel better. But I feel that you, I see you seeking something more deeper than maybe you let, you know, before it wasn't a good decision to let it go. So, yes, I do see that as a sign. Absolutely. I do.
But... Yeah, but you don't really know what it is, so I'd have to explore on my own, sort of, you're saying?
Well, that's right, because it is something that's just special to you, or, you know, connected to you. Absolutely. In a group setting.
I mean, if a whole year passed and I still don't know what they're talking about, then did I miss something, or,
I feel you should keep yourself open and to things that might pertain, for instance, to this group therapy that you saw on this one. Pay attention to other things that you might find fascinating. Group, anything with the group setting. Okay?
Okay.
I feel that, thank you. Just keep your mind open to that, and everything will open up, honestly. And I feel very strongly. I hope I helped you. And
thank you very much.
Take care of yourself. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Thank you very much, Maureen. That was a complex question, and you handled it very well. We get a lot of those sorts of questions. Is it fate? Is it a sign? Or is it a fluke? Visit Maureen or any of the psychics at psychicaccess.com, and you will find out. Now, I have a caller from the great state of Washington. Hello, Washington.
Hi there, Stephen. This is Julie.
Hi, Julie. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Glad to hear that.
How may I help? I really enjoy the show and everything. So I'll quickly ask, since the topic tonight seems to be finances, I think I'm going to ask if you see any change in my finances, good or bad.
Okay, let's see what's happening with the finances, first of all. Will there be a change in the finances first, and then we'll see if there is, whether it'll be good or bad, okay? Well, first of all, I'll tell you right now, the finances are going to change, and they're going to change for the better. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a nice guy or because I'm in a good mood. The definite evidence for this are the three of the water element, excuse me, and that's the weakest card of this very good spread. The three of the water element says that now the atmosphere is very good for you. Remember, we're talking about finances here. So now the atmosphere is very good for you. The three is a number of action. So this is the season to take action on any investments or business ideas, any enterprises that you're thinking of, you and any partners that you might be involved with. Because I'll tell you something, the next step is going to be Trump number 21, which is associated with the sun. This is what you're famous for. This is your authority on something. So it's also an energy of skill and success. So we can view it as a sort of a testing period, but it won't be so serious as that. It's generally very positive, and not only does it answer yes to the question of the finances are going to change, not only does it answer yes to the questions of are the finances changing for the better, it also answers affirmatively the question of will Julie be able to achieve some self-expression through this enterprise? You know, will she be able to sort of manifest her true nature through this enterprise? The step after that is Trump number 7, the chariot, a classic symbol of advancement, and victory. So without a doubt, you're in a very good place to launch any sort of enterprise because A, the finances will change, and B, they'll change for the better.
Cool.
Yeah, cool, right?
That's awesome. Thank you.
We got a pretty good situation going
awesome.
On here, Julie, so I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
Hey,
ready to partner up? No, I'm joking.
Yeah, hey, you're in for a treat. I think you're in for some very good days ahead. So, like I said, if you've got a business idea floating around in your head, now's the time to launch it.
Thank you, Stephen.
My pleasure, Julie. My pleasure. Okay, so we have a caller now from Virginia for Nona.
Hello, Virginia. What's your name, please? Hello?
Are you there? Hi. What's your name?
Yes, I wasn't sure you said my name.
I said your state, sorry.
Oh, okay.
So what is your name? What is your name?
My name is Lynn.
Hi, Lynn. Linda. How can I help you today? What's your question?
I didn't really have a specific question. I guess just a general, everything's been kind of up in the air. You know, finances, love life, the whole bit. So, just a general thing.
These are our introductory readings on the air, so it's more helpful for us if you have a specific question, like perhaps a relationship with somebody that you're concerned about, or a conflict at work.
Yeah, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. I had been in a long-term relationship, but it's been on and off, on and off, on and off, and everything has basically pointed to remaining that way, and but there seems to be quite a soul connection there, and so I guess I still have questions about that. There have been other people in both of our lives because of that, but there's definitely some kind of connection there, and I still have questions.
And what is the first name of your relationship person?
Ivory.
Ivory?
Yes.
This is a man or a woman?
A man.
Okay, Ivory. Well, in some ways, I will say this, in some ways you are suited for each other because you both tend to get a little impatient. You both communicate the same style, which is you get a little bit hot-tempered, but it's all, it's not mean-spirited, it's not forever, it's not vindictive, but you are kind of dramatic, both of you, when you are approaching conflicts, etc. So, so the bad does not outweigh the good in this relationship, so I honestly see you going on like this for quite a while. Because in some ways, it's a very convenient relationship. There is a great deal of passion, a lot of history between the two of you. And honestly, I don't think you really want a different kind of relationship because on the one hand, it feels to me like you really love having a man in your life. And then there's another part of you that when it gets too mundane, you almost feel smothered. And you actually get a little bit bored. So I think that this, even though this is not really a traditional relationship, that it suits you because it kind of comes and goes. You get some breaks from it. You get a little bit of freedom. It's very romantic when you get back together again. And you both are very comfortable with each other's style of communication. So I do think that some days you go, gosh, I wish I had, you know, the love of my life and it was stable, et cetera. But I think you've done that before and it makes you crazy after a while. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, it does.
Right?
Actually, it makes a lot of sense. I was in a 25-year marriage. And then this came along after and he's actually in another state, so it's a long-distance kind of thing, which has made it difficult, but I did come to kind of realize that it's been kind of what I need. If I try to date somebody that's close by, I feel smothered because they want to be too much in my space all the time, and I don't want that. But I have strong feelings for this guy, and...
Well, let me say this, in about a year, 9 months to a year, he is going to want to live with you. And I will say to you, approach that with caution because, like I said, while part of you wants that, another part of you really enjoys your freedom. And you really enjoy the fact that, in a way, when you tell him to leave you alone, he has a house to go to that's not yours.
So you will have an option, 9 months to a year, of living with him and making this a more full-time relationship. But I would say to you, you know, approach that with caution. Like perhaps you would say to him, well, come, but I want you to rent a little tiny apartment in case this doesn't work out. You have a place to go to for the weekend while we sort of get adjusted to this relationship being more intertwined. And that will be less of a shock to your system. So this relationship has a good future. It's not traditional right now. And I think sometimes you want traditional just because you're sort of used to that concept of, oh, this is what a relationship should look like. But I've seen success. I have a friend who has a successful marriage for 8 years, 9 years now, and she still doesn't live with her husband because he drives her crazy. So they have separate houses. They're married. They're monogamous. So it's okay. That stuff is okay. It's not abusive. It's working out. It's just non-traditional. And you're kind of a non-traditional person anyway, all the way around. So why suddenly should you be, you know, traditional for...
And conform.
Yeah, just kind of out of habit.
Other people's thinking, basically.
You're welcome, sweetheart. Enjoy it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you very much, Nona, for that excellent reading. You can find Nona Marie at psychicaccess.com. Now, do we have any more calls in the queue? It could be that. Let me check and see if we have anyone waiting in the line here. Okay, we have a caller from Ohio for Steve.
Thank you, Stephen. Who's calling from Ohio?
Julie.
Hello, Julie. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, Julie. Good. Thank you. How can we help you?
Yeah, I want to know about my love life.
Okay, let's have a look. Let me see. Okay, let's have a look for you. Love life. I don't feel it's been good, to be honest with you. I feel like we're looking at a situation that's been challenging, and I don't feel that you've been single. I feel that you've had difficulties in a relationship, some conflict. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
So it's been quite a challenge, and I know that the person you've had feelings for, the person you've had an involvement with, is at some distance at the moment. So there's some sadness, some stress and tension around you at this time. And you know, I want to say to you that I don't feel that you should look back and pin all of your hopes upon that situation resolving itself in the near term. I'm very sure that the outlook for you in the longer term is really positive. I feel that you will have a great relationship. You will have a wonderful life. The future is good for you, and you must keep that in mind, that your life, your path, your situation will work out well. But this situation with this person is not going to turn itself around, certainly in the near term. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I'm kind of giving up on that person. I don't think they're ever gonna.
I feel like you need to. Honestly, it was so tough that you have to question whether you would want to go back anyway. You know, a relationship should be joyful, it should be beneficial, it should be harmonious, it should really build you up, not be something that causes a lot of anxiety, because that's just not healthy for you or for any of us. And really, in life, we should all be seeking to eliminate discord.
Do you think that this person, even though I'm not going to go back, we were never really a couple, do you think that they actually had feelings for me or not at all, and I just had feelings for them?
No, I do feel that there were feelings, but I don't feel that you were a good match. You just weren't a good match for the longer term.
Yeah.
So I really feel like it's time to just draw the line and say, well, that's in the past. And the value of anything we experience is to extract the learnings. So what did you learn from this experience? Or what did you see in this person and experience in this dynamic that you would want to replicate in a future relationship? And what did you see and experience that you would not want to replicate in a future relationship? So again, we magnetize. Sorry, go ahead.
He's not going to try to come back around then, is what you're saying.
Well, I don't want to say that, but I feel if he does, it won't work out. I don't feel that the two of you will be in a relationship together in the long term. And I feel quite strongly that it's best to leave this situation alone for you to just move forward and enjoy life and let your path unfold. You know, we don't have, as individuals, full visibility of everything that the universe has planned for us. So it's not a good idea to hang on to a situation that wasn't working, because if we do, we hold ourselves back from other possibilities that can be far better for us. As I said to you, I'm really confident that you'll do well, that you'll be in a great relationship in future, but I don't feel that this is it. I do get the name Adam for you, actually. And I'm not saying that Adam is necessarily the person you've been in a relationship with, but I've got a lady in spirit that passed, she would have been born, or she would have passed in the month of September. And I don't mean that September of last year, but I know that the month of September is very significant to her, and I feel that she's a grandmother. This is not an aunt, this is a grandmother, but she's a really lovely lady, very gentle character, but a wise character. And you know, her message to you is, well, hold on for a really wonderful relationship. You know, a relationship that's not wonderful isn't worth being in, really, and we're fine as we are. And she's given me the month of October as well. Now, do you mind me asking how old you are?
I'm 43.
Okay. Well, this lady is, and again, look at your records, because she was born or she passed in the month of September. But I can tell you that the month of October will definitely be a month that you celebrate in future. So either you would meet this person you're with in the month of October, or you would engage or marry in the month of October. There's not necessarily this October, but the outlook for you is bright. It really is. But just recognize that this wasn't a great connection. It doesn't mean that it was your fault. There's nothing wrong with you. It's a question of just circumstances and compatibility. And this wasn't the right situation. I feel that your partner is somebody that's actually quite dynamic, quite a pioneering character with a lot of get up and go, probably pretty successful in business, certainly very career oriented. And I'm very confident that this person will afford you a really great relationship, and you'll have a great lifestyle together. So it's really something worth waiting for. Okay?
Oh, okay. I look forward to it. Yeah, I'm ready to move on.
You are, and you're strong. You're gentle. You're gently strong. You know, you like the strength card in the tarot deck. If you look at the strength card, it's a lady that's stroking, taming a lion, and she's doing it by being very gentle. So strength is about being gentle with ourselves, gentle in life, and trusting. But you need to put that situation behind you and be balanced, be good to yourself. You'll find that everything works out just well. My guides also give you the names Barbara and Madeline in spirit. So check out your family tree, because those names come up really strongly for you. Okay?
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Wish you all the best.
All the best, Steve. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve. You can find Steve Frampton at psychicaccess.com. We have a caller from Ohio for Maureen.
Thank you. Hello, Ohio. This is Maureen.
Hi.
Hi. May I have your name, please?
Jeannie.
Jeannie? Hi. And what can I help you with?
Well, I wanted to know. I've had a really rough year.
Everything's been negative. I don't know if you've seen anything positive come in, a good, healthy relationship or anything like that.
Well, how about this? Whatever the first thing that I can, that's the most important thing I pick up on, I will directly relay that message to you because I'm on a time restraint. Or if I see everything.
Okay.
You know, right now, yeah, you have had a hard time. I get that. Bless your heart.
Yeah,
you have definitely. Things are not what they appear to be. This is what I mean by that is things are better, even though, you know, the harder our pains are better rewards. You have almost gone through a spiritual death, not a physical, but because of that, what will happen is you come back to the beginning. So even though your wounds are open, they're healing, which is a great thing. I do see your sleep getting much better in the next, I don't know, week or so, which is great.
Oh, good.
That right there is already a good positive change going on. I also see you're waiting for something to come back to you. It's like some people are waiting for the ship to come in. You know, this has everything to do with every part of an area of your life. It's like your work and relationships and everything else. On your dreams, your dreams can be very harsh. You know, there's something to say about having, I know this is hard, but in this situation, what I'm seeing is you are a great example. I feel someone that can really, because your mind is really, you're profoundly intuitive, but your mind is very powerful. We all have powerful minds. But I feel you have not yet tapped into how much so that you can direct all that positive stuff. And I know I don't particularly like the laws of attraction, all that stuff, you know, whatever. But there is something that I do remember, and I was doing this with a friend of mine, about deliberate law of attraction, deliberately putting stuff out there. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. But I'll tell you something. You're a prime candidate for that, because I feel that what happens is even if you put out negative stuff, it'll come back. So you've gone through all that. I really feel that you can turn things around, and I see that you will attain everything that you really desire at this time. You know, there'll always be another part of your life on a timeline that'll be different, but at this time, you're in a cycle that's about ready to shift. I just want to keep you in the positive. In the positive side of it, of actually seeing it to be the case and deliberately doing the things that need to make it happen. And so far, right now, your sleep will be better, which will help.
Okay.
And knowing what you've gone through has been pretty intense, but it makes you even that much more complete, really, you know?
Crazy
so
that
I,
you saw that, because
I wouldn't settle
very,
for
very...
anything, even anything in your life. I wouldn't settle for anything. I would suggest that you keep your mindset on what vision that you have for yourself, because you are certainly deserving of it, and you have a lot going for you, and to be able to come out of something so intense the past year or so or more is an accomplishment in itself, and you were open to it. You've done some good work on yourself.
Thank you.
Thank yourself. I hope I helped you, and I wish
you
well.
Did. Tremendously. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks for calling.
God bless you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you very much, Maureen. You can find Maureen at psychicaccess.com. And that brings us to the end of another wonderful show. Big thanks to Doug, who works behind the scenes to keep us all on track. Big thanks to Stephen Frampton and Mary Lamondo for the excellent interview tonight. Big thanks to my co-hosts, Dr. Nona Marie and Maureen, for all the magic that they added tonight. And big thanks, of course, to all of you listening at home and participating in the chat room. Next week, I'll be interviewing Dr. Calvin Mercer on transhumanism and radical life extension. This is a don't miss show. So we will see all of you next week. Have a great one.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.